In the Gospel for this Sunday, from the 9th chapter of Luke. When the days drew near for Jesus to be taken up, he set his face to go to Jerusalem, and he sent messengers ahead of him. On their way, they entered a village of the Samaritans to make ready for him, but they did not receive him because he set his face to go to Jerusalem. When his disciples, James and John, saw it, they said, "Lord, do you want us to command fire to come down from heaven and consume them?" But Jesus turned and rebuked them. And then he went on to another village. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. When the time came for Jesus to be received up, he set his face to Jerusalem. On the way, he tried to enter a village of the Samaritans, but he could not enter because he had set his face to Jerusalem. Jesus turned. He went toward Jerusalem when he could have gone back home to Galilee. These are places on a map. I think there are also places in your soul. Galilee is the hinterland. Jesus, you may remember, was from Galilee, place of simple rural people, place of safety, place of home. Jesus spent most of his earthly life in Galilee without attracting much of the world's notice. But now, the name Jerusalem means peace, but it did not mean peace for Jesus. It was a seething cauldron of blood and death. Galilee meant peace, haven, home. Jerusalem, stormy darkness. But he steadfastly set his face to Jerusalem. The Greek idiom is he made his face hard as flint to Jerusalem. If you look into that hard like flint determined face, what do you see? If you look in that face, you will see struggle. Don't think that Jesus was done with temptation back in Luke 4, back in the wilderness. No, he was tempted all the way to the end by Satan. He was no pre-wired automaton, no robot moving toward his fate. He had a choice. Two roads diverged. One led back to Galilee, back to home safety. Another to Jerusalem, to suffering and betrayal. Imagine if you had to make that choice. Back there, beyond the green fields, is Nazareth, quaint village beside the little sea of Galilee. Well, it's hardly a sea. It's only about 11 miles long. Surely, back in Galilee, there were plenty of bodies to be healed and scripture to be explicated and little children to be blessed. Settle down, settle back in Galilee, said the tempter. But Jesus set his face like flint toward Jerusalem. Mark says that when Jesus set his face toward Jerusalem, his disciples were amazed and afraid. They sensed what awaited him there. Stay out here with the good country people. Let the city folk fend for themselves. When Jesus set off for Jerusalem, his friends were afraid. Afraid for him, afraid for themselves. Those milling, thronging crowds in Jerusalem, whipped up into rebellious frenzy by the celebration of the Passover, just one little spark, one ill-considered word, one too passionate sermon, the whole thing would burst into conflagration. Still, he struggled. He set his face to Jerusalem, and his followers were afraid. And the Samaritans refused to let him into their town because his face was set to Jerusalem. That's two words you hardly ever hear in proximity: struggle and spiritual. Spiritual, that's what you feel when you're at peace. I'm developing my spiritual side, she said. I'm trying to become more centered, more balanced. Yeah, that's a function of faith, to get centered, stable. Steady now, steady. We're in church. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in that wonderful face, and the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. We sang that song in the Methodist youth group in high school. You look at that face, and the world just gets out of focus, becomes dim and bearable. I've asked many people why they come here for Sunday worship. This is one of the predominant responses. I come here for peace, a calming of the nerves. I've got a demanding job, a lot of tension. And somehow this quiet place and the music and all, it helps me to settle down. Luke says it was not so with Jesus. In Galilee, there had to be times for quiet walks along the lane and meditations delivered under the shade of an olive tree. But when he got to Jerusalem, things broke out into a clamor. He flipped over the tables in the temple and drove the clergy out. He went to Gethsemane and prayed with sweat like great drops of blood. He prayed with clenched knuckles. Look at his face and see the marks of struggle. He didn't want to go, but he went. And he thereby embodied a virtue not in fashion among us: obedience. Obedience. Choir is just saying, I'm going to obey the Spirit when it says, shout. I see his face hesitating just for a moment before these two road signs pointing in opposite directions, one to the safety of Galilee, another to the peril of Jerusalem. And it was there that he said, as he would say again, nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. And obediently, he stiffened his face toward Jerusalem. So now the word is obedience. I don't know whether he knew that he would die in Jerusalem. I can't be sure. His disciples were certainly sure that it would end that way. He just said, the time is filled. The time is fulfilled. There's a lot of difference between time out in Galilee, in the slow pace of the agricultural rhythms, and time in the big hustle and bustle of the city of Jerusalem, the pushing and shoving city. He set his face down and he charged the line, as it were. He gritted his teeth, not in resignation to the mysterious workings of fate, but obedience to the will of God. To the end, it was struggle. You can feel at this point in the Gospel of Luke the tempo pick up in this gospel, the pace quicken as he set his face like flint to Jerusalem. And it was this obedience, this submission, this bowing before a as yet unknown, unseen future, and laying all of it into God's hands. No wonder his followers were amazed and afraid. To have tomorrow out of their controlling hands and into God's hands. Thy will be done as it is in heaven. And it was about then, before the week was done in Jerusalem, that another word broke in upon them, joining struggle and obedience. The word is love. The greatest sacrifices, the largest risks, are undertaken only in love, I think. Obedience can take you just so far. The biologist says that our strongest drive at birth is self-preservation. That's the way we're wired. But if we are fortunate as we grow, other lives touch ours, including the life of God. And birth is given to a much higher drive, a more noble virtue, the source of the best that we do, where struggle and obedience melt into the greatest power ever. And we are who we were created by God to be. The Word amid the betrayal and the blood and the suffering of His passion is ultimately a triumphant one. The Word is love. You will never explain His setting His face toward Jerusalem, the massive sacrifice, unless you use the word love. George Buttrick, great Presbyterian preacher, preaching from this pulpit 60 years ago, referred in his sermon on this text to a story he had read in the New York Times. A couple of young men in a big factory in New York, they're walking down the inside. They went out for a smoke. They're walking down the inside fire escape steps. One of them flicks a lighted cigarette into what he thought was a fire bucket full of water. The bucket contained gasoline. The bucket burst into flames. And that young man instinctively ran down the steps to save his skin. His friend ran up the steps to warn the workers on the upper floor of the danger. Which self in you takes over at such a time? The downstairs self or the upstairs self? The Galilee self or the Jerusalem self? When love gets deepest, it tends to become sacrificial. Love is most love when it's given away in behalf of others, when it is linked to that word sacrifice. He went to Jerusalem. He went into the fray for love. So for you and for me this morning, there are two roads. One to Galilee, the other to Jerusalem. I know the quietness that God grants us year after year in Galilee. And yet I also know that in love, God grants us those pivotal turning points. When the path diverges and we are confronted with the possibility of either the easy way out, our time of struggle and obedience and loving sacrifice. Talking to a man whose beloved wife died last year, I asked him how he was doing. He replied, "I've learned to stare this thing in the face. I've had to dive into grief. I've had to take it straight. Drink it all the way down on the rocks. I forced myself to get out, go out. I forced myself to go back to every place that we shared great times together. It is hard. It is miserable. It is necessary. I've decided to live, even though I wanted so bad to die. I think he set his face toward Jerusalem. I don't know why we think of the Christian life as a matter of finding peace, joy, and all those other sweet Galilean virtues. I guess it depends on which road we take. But I think Luke says today in the scripture, if we're going to walk with Jesus as he sets his face toward Jerusalem, we'll have to go down a narrow counter way. Elsewhere, one said, I'll follow you wherever you go. Only let me say goodbye to the old folks at home. Jesus said, the Son of Man's got nowhere to lay his head. The Samaritans refused Jesus. Not because apparently they had quibbled with his biblical interpretations. They weren't that good at scripture, the Samaritans. Not because of some theological problem, but because the way he looked, he had set his face toward Jerusalem and they didn't want him in the messing up things in town. As Christ goes striding past us into the storm, leaning into the storm, I wonder what he thinks of our placid setting here in the university. This year I preached a sermon, best I knew how, on the great adventure of life out in the real world after graduation. This student comes up to me and says, I don't see it that way. I think it's kind of depressing. Our parents have done everything. There's no room left for us to do anything. No unexplored frontier for me and my generation. I said, you really think you can't do better than the current administration? Really? Wow, that's depressing. No frontier? Does he think that Galilee and Jerusalem are just places on a map? They're fixed points on a compass that is your life and my life. Two roads diverged in a snowy wood. I took one, not the other, and my life is all the different for it. Jesus turned his face like flint to Jerusalem. I told him at my baccalaureate, my favorite book when I was a kid was Treasure Island, Robert Louis Stevenson. I read that book a dozen times. Of course, I identified with the kid in the book, Jim. But looking back, I think it was the adults that really fascinated me. These adults born in some drab little English seacoast village. But they left all that and ventured forth on the high seas for nothing but just something marked at a place on a map. All the adults I knew, they all stayed home. They left, they went to work in the morning, they came back in the afternoon, then they left again, then they came back. But the adults in Treasure Island, they went out there, they lied if they had to, they risked everything, they had really exciting deaths. From time to time in my work here, some student will ask me a question. How did you get here? It's kind of a threatening question. How did you get here? For those who ask, I tell them. I was junior year of college. I was thinking about a lot of things my junior year of college. I don't think I was thinking about the Christian ministry. But a buddy asked me to go with him down to this conference on exploring Christian ministry. I don't remember anything of the formal presentations, but I do remember on Saturday night, we sat in this, students sat on the floor in this motel room, and these young ministers, South Carolina, sitting around in the room, were talking about their lives. It was during the days of struggle of the civil rights movement in the South. One young preacher said just the week before, he had had a concrete block thrown through the back windshield of his car during a church meeting. Another had gotten the ire of the Klan and a cross had been burned on the yard of the parsonage. Another, his wife and children had been snubbed, persecuted in this small South Carolina town. He had to move. And I sat there on the floor in my low undergraduate imagination, thinking to myself, this is great. I didn't know being a Methodist preacher was this interesting. Where did I sign up for this kind of thing? Oh, but then I got a degree, I got a job, I got tenure, I got reserve parking, I got bedded down in Galilee. Now, if Jesus would come up to me and say, I got a movement on the empire, I'm headed toward Jerusalem, I fear I'd respond, does this include health insurance? Can you guarantee me that my sacrifice would be worth it? Have we got seat belts? In struggle, obedience, and loving self-sacrifice, he set his face to Jerusalem. And so the Samaritans refused and rejected him when they saw his face so set.